Is this a joke to you?
Yes.
I've been taking this so seriously for a year and a half, only to find out my whole life has been a lie.
Yeah, sorry, no, I totally understand. It's a very serious podcast about very serious issues. In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis, and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
Hi, hello. I'm Chris.
Hi, I'm Alice.
And you're listening to Xena Made Me Gay. So today we're going to be talking about season 2, episode 9. And this episode is called A Solstice Carol.
Or how many Christmas jokes you can make in an episode.
Yes, the answer is more than you would like. What more than anyone needs to be subjected to.
Yeah. I felt like the conversation went like that. Like, how many Christmas jokes do you want to put in this episode? Yes.
Yeah. I think at some point they brainstormed as many Christmas jokes as they could, and they included every single
all of them.
One. Yep. Nothing was rejected. The mind was open. It was a very welcoming environment in the writer's room that day. No idea is a bad idea was the motto. And they really followed that motto to the T. Yes, so now that we've got you excited for this episode, dear listener, let us walk you through what... passes for plot. <In this case. laughs> Also, it is somewhat a coincidence that we're releasing this episode around the winter holidays, which we thought was cute. Don't take this as any kind of planning on our parts. It just
it literally just so happened, but I'm into that. I like that it could be like a little Christmas postcard from us to our listeners.
Exactly.
Solstice postcard.
Oh, yes. How dare you? So, let's talk about what happens in this episode. We begin in the now traditional, for Xena, ancient Greek medieval times. You know, we're in ancient Greece, but it's also somehow the Middle Ages. Just go with it. It's time for yet another king. King of what, you might ask? Fuck knows. He's just a king, and that's all we need to know. But he's a bad king. So he's sentencing some poor people who haven't paid their taxes to hard labor. That's how we're introduced to him. And not only that, also he's persecuting everyone for celebrating winter solstice because he's just that bad. And just to make him kind of laughably evil, he's also outlawed toys. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry, that's kind of hilarious. Like, what do you mean you outlawed toys? How does that even work?
Yeah,
sure. And we also find out that the guy working for the king, whose job is to write down all of the orders, is called Sinterklaas. Do you get it? Sinterklaas. So clever.
And yeah, it's the kind of subtle references, quote unquote, uh-huh. that we're going to be introduced to throughout the whole episode. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, because Bad King is bad, he also wants to evict a bunch of people this evening, which happens to be Solstice Eve. And not only that, he wants to evict a bunch of orphans. Orphans that are criminally celebrating Solstice. In case you haven't noticed, it's all going to be a bit much this episode.
Yeah, it's one of those where, like, they... right off the bat, you can see that they're joking, and that's some sort of, like, an exaggeration the whole episode, but they really, really, really did not hold back this time.
So anyway, while all that drama is going on, Xena and Gabrielle are shopping for solstice gifts for each other. Mm-hmm. And while they're busy with that, an orphan decides to steal Xena's chakram. Which is honestly a wild choice.
They're in a market. So, like, out of all of the things he could steal there.
Yeah, first of all, out of all of the things in the market, he decides to steal something that is on a person walking through the market. Not only that, like, okay, he doesn't know who Xena is. Fine.
Fair.
But even if you know nothing about her, if you just saw Xena in public, would your first thought not be, okay, I better not fuck with this person? What about the way that Xena looks suggests that anything you do to her that she does not like would result in something
you
other
staying
than
alive.
Death? Yes.
Yeah.
So Xena is super unbothered by the stealing, just the calmest person you've ever seen. And while the orphan is running away, she's just casually strolling after him until she reaches his hideout, which is, well, the orphanage. And of course, Xena and Gabrielle are immediately invested in helping the kids, and Gabrielle specifically wants them to do it in a non-violent way, which Xena begrudgingly agrees to.
Yeah, in the spirit of Solstice.
Sure, which
does not make sense, because, like, Christmas that they're referring to, maybe, although, like, still... questionable, but Solstice,
like the Hallmark
pagan...
movie version of Christmas.
Yeah. But the Solstice being a pagan ritual, essentially, I don't think that non-violent thing is, like, very much there.
No, like that's. I don't think there is any reason not to be violent on the winter solstices. Actually, like, if anything, you might as well be, like, creatively
extra
violent. Yeah. Who knows. Yeah, and so from this point, we pretty much go straight into Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol, for those of you who are familiar with it, but Xena style. Confusingly, though, first, Xena actually shows up in Bad King's bedroom as herself, completely undisguised, for reasons that are unclear. Like, mm-hmm. If anything, she just makes the rest of the plan harder for herself, because now Bad King knows what she looks and sounds like.
And she has to conceal her face, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, who are we to question Xena's decision-making? Speaking of bad decision-making, Xena sends Gabrielle to the market to get some props and costumes for their ensuing ghost performances for the king. And they just barely have enough cash for everything. So they need to, like, really budget very well. And Gabrielle assures Xena that she's excellent at bargaining. And then Gabrielle sees a cute donkey that is about to be sent to the tannery. And she just immediately buys the donkey with all her money without obtaining a single item from her actual list. But of course, in the end, it doesn't matter in the slightest because Xena happens upon a room in Bad King's castle that has all the shit that they need anyway. So another thing that happens while Xena and Gabrielle are in the castle is that they run into Sinterklaas, who it turns out is a closeted toy maker.
Exactly.
We also learned that he's been pretty big in terms of his trade because he's actually made one of Gabrielle's childhood toys. And Gabrielle asks Sinterklaas about why he's gone underground with his toy making. And he says that he can't go to jail because it's not spacious enough, which is something that he will say at least 5 times throughout the episode. Like, I am not joking. About 50% of the guy's lines are some variation on, I can't go to jail. Yeah, like, that is all he says all the time.
They want us to know that he has some sort of claustrophobia, I assume. And yeah, sure. He always repeats that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of wild that you want to create a character that is essentially Santa, and the one thing that you've decided is going to be the defining feature of your ancient Greek Santa is that he can't go to jail, that he's really, really afraid of jail.
He is really afraid of small, confound spaces, and that is going to come in handy when, spoiler alert, he's going to come through the chimney, and that is going to cure his claustrophobia. Get it? Get it? I don't like it either, but that's why they did it.
But, like, okay, even accepting that, would you say that the most defining feature of Santa is that he goes through chimneys? No, that's like one of the many things that he does, but that is so far from being his defining fucking feature. Yeah, and here they just keep hammering in that, like, oh, I can't go to jail, I can't go to jail. Like, are you Santa or are you like a coward, or like someone who just values his comfort over, I don't know, justice? Like, why is that his defining feature? I truly don't get it.
I think you're like, first of all, we're thinking way deeper into this than the people who created it ever did. But other than that, I think that there is also a theme of like quiet resistance. A little bit, they touch upon it a little bit, and Gabrielle in particular has a very interesting take. I wanna discuss it at some point.
So anyway, Xena puts on a white shawl and pretends to be the fate of the past, mm-hmm. and she tries to talk Bad King into not being bad.
Mm-hmm.
Gabrielle even makes an appearance as Bad King's wife that we are initially led to believe is dead, but in reality has just left him because he sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't work. Bad King remains stubborn. So at that point, Xena changes her outfit and pretends to be the fate of the present. And this time she tells the king to change as well and put on some commoner clothes. So they're doing this very classic, the king walking among the masses thing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the masses that Xena chooses to expose the king to just happen to be the orphanage.
The perfect victim, so to say.
Sure, sure. Hilariously, the orphans also don't recognize Xena. Like, she is just wearing a slightly different outfit and makes her voice extra sexy. Those are the two changes that she makes. And everyone's like, oh my god, look at this completely random woman who we definitely have not met a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, yeah, it's very Shakespearean in like how people do not recognize each other.
Yeah, 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 it is kind of that. So Xena brings Bat King into the orphanage, and again, he resists the, let's be fair, really blatant emotional manipulation that they try to make work. But then, at the deciding moment, the royal guards arrive to evict the orphanage. And, of course, they also don't recognize the king, either. So a fight ensues. And unfortunately, it's one of those goofy-ass fights that sometimes happen on this show, where you're just kind of embarrassed for everyone involved. Just to give you a taste, our heroes shoot fake arrows with suction cups at their ends at the guards, and that works. And the climax of the battle is a literal pillow fight.
Yeah, it's very Home Alone style, although I would say that...
No, Home Alone is more violent!
...is much, much, much more violent. And here, the guards are defeated, yeah, by literal pillows and, like, stuff thrown at them.
But, like, things that physically are unable to harm them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There is this Monty Python bit where there's like a Spanish Inquisition torture, and they torture the old lady with comfy chair and soft pillow. So that's more or less that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That is much closer than Home Alone, where like he actually does very serious physical damage to the burglars. And then after this epic fight, the lady running the orphanage emerges, and it turns out that she is Bat King's wife. So, according to the plot, she left the guy 30 years ago because he sucked so bad, and now, out of literally nowhere, she's like, oh, I forgive you! For reasons!
Hate it!
And Bat King magically stops being bad.
It's all very
cringe. It's very, very cringe.
Like, we've been saying a lot how Xena, Warrior Princess, the TV show, actually aged pretty well in terms of, like, how women are depicted and, like, relationships are depicted. But this is one of the lowest points that I've seen so far. This is bad.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it feels like the target audience age for this episode is 5.
Yes, and also simultaneously, it kind of cosplays the Hallmark movie a little bit of like, oh, families should stay together, the traditional values.
Yeah, yeah, it does really give Hallmark movie for a lot of its runtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, so imagine a Hallmark movie targeting 5-year-olds, and you will have a pretty accurate picture of this episode. Mm-hmm. Place your bets now on how many chakrams we give at the end.
Yeah.
So all is well, of course. Everyone is saved, and Xena and Gabrielle go on their merry way. With the donkey in tow that Gabrielle bought. But then they literally run into Mary and Joseph, with Mary carrying the fucking baby Jesus. And Gabrielle gives the donkey to them. So finally, Xena gives her solstice gift to Gabrielle, which is a toy identical to the one that Gabrielle had as a kid that Santa Claus made. And Gabrielle, shockingly, does not have a gift for Xena. Like, nothing? Not even a shitty poem? Xena, of course, is a better person than me, because she accepts this lack of gift with utmost grace, saying that Gabrielle herself is a gift to her.
Aww. But that rings very true to their dynamic in terms of who comes with the gift and who comes with nothing.
Yes. And that is the end of the episode, mercifully.
Nice. Great.
So.
Yeah, and like, okay, so I want to say that I did not entirely hate it in terms of, like, I like when they do bits and, like, are committed to the bit. I like the sure. ancient Greek supermarket sort of joke. Mm-hmm. And certain Christmas jokes that were made in this episode, especially towards the beginning, where I didn't know that there will be, like, 5,100 of them.
1,100?
500,000. I didn't know that there will be 500,000 of them. Kind of were like, oh, I chuckled. But then uh-huh. progressively, it kind of went downhill for me. Yeah. That being said, like the things that I did enjoy were, for example, an exchange that Gabrielle and Xena have at the very beginning at the market, where Gabrielle is like, we shouldn't spend too much on a solstice gift, because, like, of course, like, they have solstice gifts to each other. Mm-hmm. Maybe like 5 dinars, and Xena is like, well, I can just give you 5 dinars and you buy yourself whatever you want. So basically Xena is just discovering the concept of a gift card.
yeah, which actually that felt a little bit I don't know whether it was out of character necessarily for Xena, but I would assume that Xena actually is a more thoughtful partner than that, and that she would want to put some thought into what she should get Gabrielle. Like, that felt a bit shitty boyfriendy of her. For me.
I don't know. I kind of did not mind it, because it seemed that Gabrielle is the one who's making a fuss out of solstice, and I think that Xena just doesn't care about this holiday. So maybe, it's like a foreign concept that is introduced to her by Gabrielle, and she's like, mm-hmm. oh, let's do this and let's celebrate this thing that you have no idea about, but I like it, and let's give each other gifts, but like not big gifts, but small gifts, like about 5 dinars. And it's so specific that Xena is like, okay, like,
I see.
That kind of felt like this dynamic to me. But she is a more thoughtful partner in the end, as we find out.
Yeah. I'll see.
Yeah. Also, I like the fact that not that I liked it, but like it was like a cheeky thing that I noticed when the ridiculous fight ensues with the guards, Xena, I think, ties a ribbon to her chakram, and like it goes around the guards at some point, right?
Yep.
And Gabrielle's like, oh, I did not know you do gift wrapping. Pause for laughter.
Yep. Amazing. Yeah. Sure. That happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was already over it by the time that happened, and that was like 5 minutes in.
Fair.
So one notable detail that I wanted to point out is that for some reason in the Xena universe, there is a thing that is whistle-operated animals.
Yep.
Like, we thought it was just Argo, but it's not. The donkey that Gabrielle buys so that it's not taken to the tannery also is whistle operated. Like, at first they think he's just a really stubborn donkey, but it's not that he's stubborn, is that he only and exclusively responds to whistling, which is a thing.
It wasn't in the factory settings. It's not that Gabrielle trained him to be like
that. No, or the guy who's trying to sell him either. Like, one of the reasons it seems like he's selling the donkey is that the donkey is too fucking stubborn. He's had enough of him. Yeah. And like, the factory settings are quite specific. Like, there is a very particular whistle that means forward and a very particular whistle that means back, and they're not the same, and like, it has to be this way. I just, it's so random.
Yeah, I guess like the joke is that he's like Argo.
And?
that's a joke. Because Gabrielle at some point even tells Xena, like, oh, and he's like Argo. And Xena's like, yeah, I don't see that, but okay. Yeah. Gabrielle makes a lot of questionable decisions in the episode. One of them is to tell another story, and I got my representation in the universe, because when she is telling the story, and like, she's telling the story about Solstice, and it's the same boring style that she always has, and we see the orphans kind of gathered around and listening to her, and I guess like one kid did not get the memo that we all should pretend that Gabrielle is such a great storyteller, so he's sitting there with this like deadpan face, deadpan expression. I'm like, I see you, kid. That would be me.
Yeah, I mean, but even according to the plot, the kids don't like the story. They're like,
yeah,
aw, that's kind of a bummer. And then Gabrielle's like, oh, yes, totally. I also don't like the ending of the story. Let's change it.
Yeah, but the part that I kind of did not mind is this reenactment of A Christmas Carol and Xena being the ghost of Christmas past. It was not her idea to put on this show, and she really looked like a reluctant game master in Gabrielle's story. So she's like, I'll go and be a game master for this particular location for those kind of players, but you should know that I do not enjoy it. And that rang very true to my LARPing days, because like, sometimes like people need to like go to a specific location, or like either play the villain or like play a messenger or like go scare someone. And like, sometimes like, it's a game master who's like, he was sitting by the fire with like warm tea, and now you have to put on a costume and go and scare someone, and like, okay.
Yeah. I thought Xena, yes, she was definitely reluctant to participate, but she's not the kind of person that half-asses things. So she really was putting in as much effort as she could make herself. And again, like I briefly mentioned that in the recap, but the voice that she did for the fate of the present, honey, I would listen to Xena speak in that voice happily at any moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was good.
That was very good.
At least we could enjoy that. But yeah, again, we mentioned it a couple of times, but like, just if you haven't watched this episode in a while, just imagine that a Christmas pun or a Christmas joke or a Christmas reference happens roughly every 3 to 4 seconds.
Well, nothing to 4 seconds, but you know.
Yeah, I was listing them before, and then I was like, just fuck it. I won't list them all, because there are just too many, especially at the end. Like, Santa Claus, he wears a disguise to go to the orphanage carrying a sack of toys, and the disguise is Coca-Cola red.
He's wearing a fake beard, because they just happened to have a fake beard laying around somewhere.
Yeah, and when something happens that he likes, he does the ho ho ho.
Yeah. No, it gets too much too quickly, and then it keeps going.
And then it keeps going, and then it, at the end, it concludes itself with us seeing literal Jesus.
Yep. Literal baby Jesus.
Was yeah, born prematurely in this universe, I guess. Like, it depends on the calendar, but like...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, isn't there a dispute about like what
It's a technical take that has no place in the universe of Xena Warrior Princess.
Yeah, Jesus. I feel like that's fine. Like, I'm okay with Jesus being born like on December 15th or whatever.
I mean, I'm okay. I guess I would like to thank them of not being too literal of like, this is a miracle child, because they could go
He glows. What do you mean not? Yes. What do you mean they're not being literal about it being a miracle child? He there's light coming from the baby.
Really?
That's very so literal. Much.
I missed that, or like I put it out of my mind as soon as I saw it. That's horrible. Okay, I take it back. That's horrible.
No. They're being like, the only thing that they don't do is that we don't hear a chorus of angels every time Jesus is on screen, but like they do everything else.
Yeah, I guess like maybe then like it's in a true fashion of a Hallmark movie, a lot of religion and a lot of very ambiguous morals, I would say, because there is this king, and we know that the king has been quote unquote bad for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And okay, he outlawed toys, I guess we can live with that. But we can't.
Wow. Oh my god. What the fuck?
No, we can.
We cannot accept that, and we won't. Bitch.
Especially adult ones. Yeah.
Yes. Which ones do you think I was talking about?
I knew that you were talking about adult ones. Somehow
exactly.
I knew.
You know me well.
But okay, so apart from this terrible crime, he also sentences people to hard labor. And, like, it's not just, like, a walk in the park. I would assume that, like, people who he sentenced, like, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, are somehow already dead.
Oh, fully dead.
And we're, right? And, like, we're supposed to just, like, accept that he magically changed and... Then, yes, of course, like, his wife can come back to him, and now he's a good king, so all is forgiven. And fuck those people who died before, right? Like, they don't matter. What matters is that the king is good now.
Yeah, like, he does absolutely nothing redeeming. At no point is there any sacrifice on his part. At no point does he, like, truly see that he's been doing wrong.
Yeah,
but,
he says some words.
But I don't think he means it. Like, at some point, he's scared of dying alone.
Yep,
and he's like, oh, shit, that will be unpleasant. I can change. That's all he says. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm, change mm-hmm. what? Change how? Do you feel sorry about anything? No, it's just, like, pure fear of dying alone. And then him, like, trying to bargain his way out of it, which he is successful at, shockingly. But through no merit of his own.
And, like, again, in an abstract pretend world, like, okay, I could see how they try to, like, squeeze it in for the plot. But, again, like, living in today's world and having tyrants reigning for decades, like, would we be able to just, like, say, oh, you changed, like, then that all is forgiven? No, like, at some point, like, there's point of no return. And, like, it feels how they show it, especially that they, a couple of times they mentioned 30 years of this. I would say that's a point of no return. Like,
it's not
someone who became bonkers yesterday and, like, had no time to do any evil just yet. No, it's just like 30 years of terror, and then now we're going to forgive him. So,
yeah, and like as we see with Xena, who's also done terrible things, like, there is a path to redemption, but that is a long ass fucking path, and that is not what happens with him.
No, he just stays to live his comfortable life with his comfortable wife who returns to him, as you say, for reasons.
I do want to talk about the wife, because, like, that whole plot line, absolutely baffling. Like, she essentially knows the entire episode that she can easily solve all of the problems of the orphanage by just going to the king somehow and being like, hey, dude, I know we haven't been on great terms, but here I am, and I have this cute little orphanage, and I would like you not to evict it. Bam! Problem solved. Instead, for really, really, truly no reason other than the plot demands it, she just hides her identity and then randomly decides no longer to hide it and just walk out to the king and be like, hey, I hated you 30 years ago when you weren't even this bad. You've become worse since then. ? Profit.
Yeah, and like, again, if we take this seriously, to try to kind of inject it into reality, then there are two reasons. Like, either she doesn't really care about the orphans, and that's just like her project at the moment. She's like a rich lady, like doing stuff like
social entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Or, which kind of like rings more true to me, the king is just like abusive and violent, and she knew that if she would go to him, he would like lock her up or something, and like she couldn't reveal her identity for those reasons, which is like you basically returning to your abuser, which is like fun Christmas story.
No, it's very dark. Like, the most logical explanation, as you said, is the darkest one. And I did not, I was confused, and now you've provided an explanation, and now I'm sad. Christmas.
Yay. Yeah, and speaking of sad things happening, again, like, I guess because, like, when you think about it as just this magical medieval kingdom in ancient Greece, then whatever, we don't care. But because a lot of those things ring very true to what's happening now in the world, it becomes kind of hard to joke about it. Like, Centocles quietly changes sentences when he can. He's like...
Yeah, like, makes them slightly less harsh.
Yeah. And... He's doing basically like this quiet resistance, but like a real resistance, actually.
Yeah.
But Xena and Gabrielle, but mostly Gabrielle, they bully the shit of this poor man. They're like, you're already in prison. You are like this small and trapped. And like, if you don't fight with us now openly, you basically already... everything that you feared already happened. And like, yeah, it's those are very nice words, but when the alternative is death, it's
or you know, years and years of hard labor and then death.
It's really better to preserve yourself sometimes and to do what you can, which he does. Like, this bullying of quiet resistance really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I think it was also like so clearly the position of the writers that like, oh, fuck this guy. Because I think that was the only reason he kept repeating like, oh, I can't go to jail. Kind of concealing the fact that he's already been doing the things that are very much punishable by jail or worse. So it seems like they deliberately made him look like he sucks more than he does.
I mean, they try to, but again, like looking at it through the eyes of any sort of reality, you're like, no, he doesn't. And actually, Gabrielle looks like this, you know, like this person who is, self-righteous person who has nothing to lose in this situation and hasn't been living in this town. And she's like, oh, well, you could have done more. Go fuck yourself, girl.
And he even says it to her at some point. He runs away because the guards are about to come in. And when they see each other again, Gabrielle's like, oh, wow, you ran away. Boo. And he's like, well, you have Xena, so you would have been fine. What do you think would have happened to me, bitch?
Which is fair.
Very solid point, yeah. But still, he's like, the way he's portrayed is like, oh, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't get real resistance. He's just this like small man, this cowardly man. Okay.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the fun credits of the episode, which say, Centocles was not harmed during the production of this motion picture. However, several chimneys are in dire need of repair.
Ha. Huh.
I would say, ho. I would even say, ho, ho. You know, actually, you know what I would say? I would say, ho, ho, ho. And this joke is better than most of the other. You know how this joke was bad, dear listener. Yet, it was better than the ones we got in the episode.
Yeah.
So now to talk about something nice. What was the gayest moment of the episode?
I even wrote it down because it was such a small little detail that I was afraid that I'd forget it by the time we record. At some point, there's a discussion between Gabrielle and Xena, like, should Xena beat the shit out of the king, or should they do this non-violent approach that Gabrielle suggests? And, like, Xena, of course, like, we know which way she's leaning, and I think it's happening in front of Centocles,
I think so.
Gabrielle, justifying Xena's response, says, oh, she's very physical.
I'm sure she is. I'm sure she is.
Yep.
The only reason to be jealous of Gabrielle, honestly, is to have Xena be physical with you.
Very physical.
Yeah, for me, I do agree it's probably the strongest pick, but just out of respect for the tradition of us picking two different moments, I think I'll just go with the ending of, like, first Xena giving Gabrielle a very thoughtful gift and then telling Gabrielle that she's already a gift to her, like,
this is love,
you know. It is. And the $1 million question: how many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
I would say that my logic was that, like, I would say that, like, the lowest amount of chakrams is reserved for episodes that were just blatantly boring, and that's the worst thing that an episode could be. This was nonsensical and with irritating puns and with very, very questionable morals, but because it was not entirely boring, I would be generous and give it a 3.
Okay. I don't know where I would scrape that extra point from, this extra chakram from. So I'm going to do a 2. It's not that it had absolutely nothing to offer, but it was very, very little. And I checked whether we've had lower chakram readings before, and we have. So okay. Episode 4 of season 1, Cradle of Hope, featuring Ping Pong Baby. Yep. That one we both gave a 2. 2?
Mm-hmm.
And there was an episode where I gave an episode a 2 and you gave it a 7. Which was Death in Chains, featuring zombie hide and seek. But then there was episode 16 of season 1, Mortal Beloved, featuring the claws of heterosexuality. And that one got the proud rating of 1 chakram from each of us. Mm. So yeah, so far this is the 3rd worst episode of Xena we've reviewed. But there's always hope for a new day, a new episode. And that one will be episode 10 of season 2 of Xena Warrior Princess, called Xena Scrolls.
Okay, okay. I have a good feeling about that one. And by good feeling, I mean like I have a vague memory about that one.
Okay, okay. So we're gonna recap that for you very soon. And until then, it would be great if you could give our podcast a lovely 5-star rating. We would really, really appreciate it. If you can leave a good review, that would also be awesome. You can follow us on Instagram at Xena Made Me Gay. And we're always happy to receive your messages if you're willing to send us any. And until then, bye.
Bye.